Welcome to our Bible study on the book of Esther, chapter 7, verses 1 through 6, verses 9 through 10, and then chapter 9, verses 20 through 22. As always, I am assuming you have read the passage, that you have your Bible open before you, and that you understand our translations may not agree. I also want to invite you to join us on Wednesday at 5:15 at the church in the Fellowship Hall for an in-person Bible study. Because this is the only reading from the book of Esther in the entire 3-year cycle of the lectionary, and because 11 verses hardly does the book of Esther justice, we will spend some time and attention on an overview of the book of Esther before looking at the actual verses. Esther is intended as an over-the-top, humorous story, complete with an inept and laughable ruler, a wicked and scheming villain, a wise and older father figure, and of course, a young and beautiful heroine. In some ways, it is like a Shakespeare play, a comedy, because all ends happily. The book of Esther is meant to be read as if it were history, but is most likely a story to explain the origins of a very popular Jewish holiday called Purim, and how good triumphs over evil, even in times of oppression. However, nowhere in the book of Esther is God mentioned. Nowhere. Not even once. God has many names in the Bible, but none of them show up in Esther. It's the only book in the Bible where God is not mentioned. The book of Esther is never quoted in the New Testament, though the story was popular when the New Testament was written. There's no mention of worship, the Torah, the law, the covenant, Judah, Jerusalem, the temple, or dietary restrictions. Apparently, Mordecai and Esther and all the other Jews could have all the cheeseburgers and shrimp they wanted. There is no concern about ritual purity and nothing that is distinct about Jews living in that culture. Esther is married to a Gentile, a non-Jew, and is so assimilated into the culture that no one even knows she's Jewish. There are no prayers, and the only fast in the book is not directed to God. In other words, the book of Esther reads like the Real Housewives of the Persian Empire and seems to be primarily written to explain how the festival of Purim got started and why it is celebrated in such a rowdy way. Basically, Esther is a short story with three main characters: Esther, Mordecai, and Haman, and two lesser characters, King Ahasuerus and Queen Vashti. Queen Vashti, though courageous, has a very small role and is basically used to set up the storyline. The story takes place in the time of the Persian Empire, possibly during the reign of Xerxes around 485 to 464 BC. And centers around an unsuccessful attempt to kill the Jews. The threat was averted by the courage and shrewdness of Esther and Mordecai, with the aid of a series of fortuitous circumstances. But beneath this light-hearted surface, the book of Esther explores darker themes, racial hatred, and the threat of genocide. The villain of the story is Haman, an arrogant, egotistical advisor to the king. Haman hated Mordecai because Mordecai refused to bow down to Haman. So Haman plotted to destroy the Jewish people. And by the way, for those who were able to come to the in-person Bible study, I hope to provide some historical background that may have contributed to Mordecai's refusal to bow before Haman. Continuing on, Haman schemes to accomplish his goal by bribing the king to proclaim the destruction of the Jews, that's in chapter 3, verses 7 through 15, on a date set by the casting of lots, that is, Pur. As indicated in chapter 9, the Jewish festival of Purim is taken from the word Pur, meaning the casting of lots, And even though the practice of casting lots is mentioned 70 times in the Old Testament and 7 times in the New Testament, we don't really know what lots were. They could have been sticks of various lengths, flat stones like coins, or some kind of dice. Purim is celebrated on the 14th day of the Jewish month of Adar, which usually corresponds to our month of March. The 13th of Adar is the day that Haman had chosen for the extermination of the Jews, and the day that the Jews battled for their lives. The 14th is when they celebrated their survival in the outlying villages, and in walled cities it is celebrated on the 15th because deliverance was not complete until then. As we look at chapter 7, verses 1 through 10, these first verses come from the climax of one of the two main plot lines of the story and are best understood in that wider context. Here, the scene is the second banquet and opens up in the same way that Esther's first banquet did in chapter 5, verses 4 through 8. Esther is referred to as queen, both by the narrator and by the king, emphasizing her status above Haman. In verse 2, they reach the wine course, and the king repeats his offer to Esther for the third time, in exactly the same language as before that we saw in chapter 3, verse 3, and chapter 3, verse 6. Now is the moment for Esther to speak. Esther responds to the king using the proper courtly phrases. Notice that the phrase found favor rather than gained favor is used. Esther may have gained favor, but when she speaks to the king, she gives all the credit to him. She matches the words of the king's offer in her speech, petition and request. But her request is a bombshell. Her life and her people are threatened. In verse 3, the sentence, petition, which equals life, request, which equals people, equates the two. Esther is now fully identified with the Jews. She indicates, however, by the order of her request, that she realizes what will be more important to King Ahasuerus, her own life. This king, ruled by his own selfish concerns, would be much more affected by the loss of his wife than by the slaughter of an entire group of his subjects. Esther, by verse 4, Esther gains steam. She declares that the Jews have been sold, a not-so-veiled allusion to the king's acceptance of Haman's bribe. She is careful, however, to make the verb impersonal, we have been sold, so as to not make a direct accusation of the king. She goes on to repeat the verbs of the decree in chapter 3, verse 13, to destroy, to slay, and to annihilate. The final clause of her accusation is a bit strange. The Hebrew is uncertain, and translations differ. Is she really saying that slavery would be acceptable, or is she just playing a rhetorical game? And that last phrase in Hebrew is almost untranslatable, for there is no distress equivalent in injury. In verse 5, the king inquires who has caused this, and in verse 6 comes Esther's accusation of Haman. In verses 9 through 10, the plot is brought to an ironic climax when King Ahasuerus, after finding Haman in what the king takes to be a compromising position with Esther, decrees Haman's death. The irony is that Haman dies on the gallows that he had built for Mordecai. In chapter 9, let's go back to verse 17. Verses 17 through 19 give the historical basis for Purim. In verse 17, the Jews in the provinces fight on the 13th of Adar and party on the 14th. In verse 18, the Jews in Susa, possibly representing all walled cities, fight on the 13th and the 14th and party on the 15th. Verse 19 seems to make it clear that the festival started in the villages in the countryside. The day is described as a day of gladness and joy and feasting as well as giving. Verses 20 through 22 tell of Mordecai's writing in his own name, not the king's, to the Jews, not to the whole population. In verse 21, in contrast to verse 19, where Jews in the country celebrated on the 14th and the Susa Jews on the 15th, Mordecai seems to be requesting that all Jews everywhere celebrate both days. In conclusion, the book's theme is one of the favorites of oppressed and persecuted people everywhere, that their powerful but foolish persecutors are defeated by their own hostile plans. The story gives encouragement to those who see themselves threatened by hostile oppressors. The book of Esther also emphasizes the importance of human action in accomplishing God's purpose in chapter 4, verse 13. As Mordecai reminds Esther, she does have power in chapter 4, verse 14, possibly, precisely, for such a time as this. Thank you for listening. Take care and God bless.